Blog Talk Radio.
Hello? Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine.
Okay. Is this Dr. Randy Short?
No, this is Brian Coleman.
Oh, look, Brian, I'm so sorry. You sound, I don't want to say what I want to say you sound like, okay? All right. I don't want to say what I'm, yeah. I wasn't going to say that because you sound
Now I'm looking at the blog radio. What am I supposed to press? What am I supposed to press the key in?
What you need?
I just need to be on the phone. I don't need to go into the thing. What I need to do?
No, I'm looking at you. I'm good. I got your number right here.
No, I don't need to key nothing in on the computer, do I? I don't need to go on the computer, too, huh?
No. Somebody else is calling in. Let me catch this other person.
All right.
Hello. Welcome to Say Your Piece.
Hello.
How are you?
I want to be good. How are you?
All right. And who am I speaking with?
I'm Randy Short.
Okay. All right. You're Dr. Randy Short. Okay. All right.
Hi, Randy.
Okay, there
Hello.
You go. Okay.
This is Brian Coleman. I'm keeping you connected.
Okay. How
Andrea,
are you?
Andrea, how are you?
Oh, I'm all right. I'm all right.
Good.
Okay, I guess we're waiting for a couple of more people to call in. Let me introduce myself first and foremost. My name is Salita McCall. I am an old radio show host of Blog Talk Radio way before I went live radio. And I thought it was a good thing for me to come back because certain things I can only say on my show, on live radio. On here, I can say whatever I want because it's actually my show. So I thought I said I would open back up the lines and open up the show again, but in another perspective. And that's when I came to say your piece. I'm also an author. I'm a veteran. I also have two other shows that I work on. I work with Brian Coleman as a co-host on Keeping You Connected. And I also have my own show on every Friday. It's called Little East Author Showcase, where I feature authors from all over the place, and I kind of give them a platform to talk about their books and, you know, to promote their books. So I do that also. Plus, I am a full-time student at the same time. So I try to stay as busy as I can because you know what they say about idle hands and idle minds?
Workshop.
Can you guys hear me? Yes.
I hear you. Exactly. We can hear you.
Okay. So, and this show is basically, just like I said, say your piece. Whatever you need to talk about, we can talk about it. I'm not knowledgeable about a lot of things, but some things I am. I always say I'm a jack of all trades, but master of none. I might know a little bit about something. But overall, this is what I love to do. And I even changed my major because I love to talk, so... I'm hoping this show would be, you guys have to work with me because this is a new format from what I'm used to. So just kind of work with me. I hope I don't lose anybody. According to the program, I'm supposed to be able to connect at least 50 people. So I think that's real good. So are we waiting on Rosalind and we're waiting on Mr. Shabazz, right? Brian?
I'm still here.
Okay. Can you hear me?
I don't know. Yeah, I can hear you fine. I don't know about Randy. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah. Okay. Can you hear me real well? Can you hear me real good?
Yes.
Okay. It must be hesitating with you. Are you getting hesitant before you hear exactly what we're saying?
No, I'm fine.
Okay. We got somebody else who just called in. Just a second. Oh, they all call in that one time.
Hello? Hello.
Yes, who am I speaking with?
Malcolm Shabazz.
Okay, thank you. There we go. Okay, let me get this next person.
Okay.
Hello.
How you doing? Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Okay.
Hello.
Yeah, my name is Kevin. Yeah, can you hear me? My name is Kevin Muhammad.
Okay, sure, I sure can. I can hear you. Yes, I can.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so who would like to open up the platform? Anybody can open it up. I'm an avenue for you to open it up to what we were talking about. I think the issues were supposed to be community issues and how we're handling the government, and I think that's how we were supposed to be opening this one up.
Okay.
So anybody want
to
open it up?
I would love for us to this one thing I would love to talk on that we've talked briefly on, and well, not briefly, but we've talked, but I think you can't talk enough about one of the things, this industrial prison complex that we have, this legalized slavery that's going on, turning out black people.
Okay.
I know my brother Randy Short, Dr. Randy Short, has some significant information that would really help us in bringing out the actual facts on that. Is that correct, Randy?
I think so, at least something. And I'm just thinking, you know, I'm in one of these moods. But just if we open up, we have to think about the fact that we always hear that this is the land of the free and the home of the brave. And yet in this land of the free and the home of the brave, we've got, over 2.5 million people in lockdown, locked up.
Mm-hmm.
And 98% of these people are in prison because they pled to a lesser charge. They weren't
mm-hmm.
even really defeated in their case what they were charged of. They basically agreed to be guilty to avoid facing perhaps a more difficult sentence. So the whole criminal injustice system is based on basically, you can't afford an attorney, and you don't want the state to come down on you like a mountain of bricks, so you say you did it. So imagine
mm-hmm.
we have the world's largest prison population, and almost 100% of them have said that they did it in order to avoid getting worse treatment. So, you know, imagine that. And then we just get into race and class and everything else, and there's something rotten about that.
Yes. This is Kevin Muhammad. I'm
Go
the
ahead.
Author of Psychological War. If I may speak from
uh-huh.
my own experience, when I went into prison, which was based on a car I stole at the age of 19 in Southern California, I lied in court claiming that I did not steal this car, that there was someone else who stole the car, and I bought the car from the person who stole it. And based on that lie, instead of me getting a 3-year deal for a plea bargain, I went ahead and fought my case, and I was sentenced to 9 years. And of those 9 years, I did 6. So I was one of those persons who actually committed the crime and should have just told the truth, and I could have avoided everything that came out of that as a result of me telling a lie, because I didn't want to do one additional day from the time they offered me that deal. You know, so I hear the stereotype of, you know, most of these guys are in prison that are innocent. I happen to be one of those who was actually guilty
mm-hmm.
of the crime I committed. You know, I robbed a car salesman at gunpoint at the age of 19 in Southern California back in 1992. So,
mm-hmm.
This is Brian Coleman. My problem with the way this system is set up is that when we look at the numbers and we see the disproportionate number of people being...
Hello?
Yes.
Okay. Hello?
I can hear you, yes. I want to join the conversation.
Okay, that's fine. Go ahead, Brian, finish.
But the number of black people that's
being... Yeah, I hear you.
Incarcerated in these United States is alarming. We can look at just in Louisiana, the state, I know, Salida, which you and I live in, Louisiana is like number one on the list, and is steady trying to open more prisons and private prisons, and that being in the prison system allows legalized slavery, it's disturbing. And I think, of course, there are people we know that have committed crimes, but we also know that a lot of people that have not committed these crimes who are being unjustly jailed are the crime that they committed gets different sentences for the ones of the counterparts of the white persuasion. So that's one of my problems, equality, justice. We as black people are not getting it.
That's right.
My curiosity is, go ahead.
Listen, can I say something first of all, you guys? Rule is, can you turn down your computers? Because when you're on, because you're on air, we can hear you on the background. You can hear us talking on the background. So if you turn down your computers, because I'm hearing somebody else.
Yeah, I do
hear
that.
Hello. I would like to introduce myself. I'm the founder of the Free Wesley Snipes Movement. My name is Rosalyn Claus Ratliff. Hello.
We're trying to make sure everybody can hear because I'm hearing some backlash in the background.
Yes, I hear it as well.
Let me make sure mine's not too hot. I'm the one who's talking. I got to make sure mine's not too loud myself. Okay, let me turn. Okay, can you guys still hear?
It sounds better now.
Okay,
it sounds a lot better.
Okay.
Is mine too loud?
Now everybody. Everybody can hear?
Yes.
All right. Now, as I was saying, I was a correction officer in Tennessee, and I even noticed that just talking with the guys that most of the reasons why they were in prison was because of the drugs. I mean, something simple as getting caught with drugs, something that they probably could have pleaded out or got rehabilitated and moved on with their life. But they didn't. They wind up being in the system. And I know there was a big thing about the difference between cocaine and crack. You know, any little thing that they can do to keep us locked up, they do it.
Uh-huh.
And we also, as responsible adults, need to check the things that we do. I mean, you make mistakes. I'm not saying you can't make a mistake. But if you could have avoided making that mistake, would you have still done the deed? You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
Absolutely.
So, would you have still done
recently,
what it was that was wrong when you didn't have a reason to do?
There was recently a survey just done. I don't remember exactly who was the writer, but this came out of the state of Michigan. And it was reported that 50% of most prisoners that's in jail, African-American, Hispanic, and also females were also included, were wrongful convictions. 50% of them were wrongful convictions. Most of the convictions had been, I'm starting to lose my thought here. Most of the convictions had been false claims made by crooked prosecutioners. And this has got to stop. I mean, this is why we're here. We're here to get this word out to America. Mass incarceration and unfair sentencing here in America seems to be an issue. It's the unspoken issue that African Americans just refuse to speak on. We need to bring this matter up, and we need to fight this matter in a UN arena as a civil rights issue. We have currently 1.1 million African Americans incarcerated. And as I just mentioned, 50% of them are in jail innocent, wrongful convictions.
Now, if
it's
I may
join the conversation.
This is
go ahead.
This is Kevin Muhammad again. Now, I'm speaking from personal experience. There's a big difference from a statistic and then our personal experience. So if the people that are addressing this issue could tell us something that we could relate to from yourself, that will make a huge difference in the listening audience than reciting statistics. So
let's see if I can help in here.
Right.
My name is Evie Litwack, and I write under the name of Ex-Offender Nation. I'm just going to say I want to talk about why people are incarcerated. You have to remember that in 1972 there were only 200,000 people in prison, and that it in the last 40 years we have built up to 2.3 million. And it's important to understand why. And the why is because prison is business.
Yes.
I'll break it down. I'll break down just
absolutely
one number. You have the people that service the prisons. You have prisoners who work for the Fortune 500 companies.
Mm-hmm.
And more importantly, you have the individual states that rely on the income that they get from prison. So every prison has a commissary. Commissary in the states, I'm just going to give you two examples of Florida and Texas. Commissaries make, commissaries are the places where I was incarcerated, where we go to buy extra food or extra items that we
mm-hmm.
need. The state of Florida gets $30 million a year, and this is published.
Hey.
This is not a number.
How are you
I'm
doing?
Thinking. Who's
Hello?
That?
Hello?
Continue, please. We hear you.
Oh, okay.
They get $30 million a year just from one line item. So when states are getting $100 million a year for they have no incentive to lessen the number of people that are incarcerated. They want a body count. It's not just about, there are more black people, more Hispanic people than there are in the culture, but in general, they just want a body count. They need the money to fill their coffers.
Okay.
And the Fortune 500 companies are using these people for telemarketing, for salmon fishing, for making military equipment, for sewing for Target. So you've got a system that requires that we have this many people incarcerated. And the reason, if I'll just add one more point and I'll shut up, the reason that you have the passage of the laws that are so restrictive in Arizona around illegal immigrants is because this is a mouthwatering idea to business, to the states, to have 12 million extra people which they can use for labor. Because if you have two, it basically gives them 6 times the population. Anyway, that's all I will say right now. I'm going to let you guys.
Thank you. May I speak to and join in the conversation? Hi, everyone. My name is Davia Carter, and I'm a member of the Free Wesley Snipes movement with Mrs. Roslyn. Hey, Roslyn. I just wanted to interject. I do agree with, most of everything the last person had just said, but also with the prison system, you have to, it's not just, they want a body. It's the way the laws are set up for our people,
mm-hmm.
it seems like more of our men, young men, are in jail, on parole, on probation, than in college, young men. And it's like set up for us to fail with Jim Crow. This is the real deal, the new Jim Crow. This is the new slavery here. I mean,
mm-hmm.
even with the laws concerning Mr. Wesley Snipes, and the media coverage saying that he's a tax evader, and before, when I first heard about it, before I read up on it, that's the, conception they want us to, think out there. But he's not. He was just late. Who's not late sometimes paying their bills?
Well, he wasn't late with paying the bills. He was late with filing the form. His bills are paid. So,
that's even worse. They use him as a scapegoat. They use him, because he is an entertainer and he's powerful in teaching, teaching people on how to, make their own money, how to be independent, be entrepreneurs. And then again, I have another thing that bothers me, with the stand your ground law.
Yes.
A lot of states have this stand your ground law, and it's just a license to kill our kids.
Mm-hmm.
I think Mr. Zimmerman is going to get off. It's another case in Florida with Miss Marissa Alexander. She used that same law because she shot a warning shot up in the ceiling to get away from her abuser. I mean, she had a protection order. She did everything she was supposed to do, and they didn't protect this woman. Do you know they gave her 20 years? 20 years. I mean, I'm like, I'm so angry about, you know, the way these laws are set up, and we do need to do something. We have to change them.
Oh, we have to change it, and the only way we're going to change this is going to the UN to try to make a change. It's not going to work in our judicial system. We have a bunch of lawyers and we have a bunch of judges within the system that's all in cahoots together, and we're like dogs chasing our tails, just running in circles.
Mm-hmm.
Because in our Constitution, it states that they abolish slavery everywhere in the United States without the exception of the prison system. Within the prison system, everyone is still slaves.
Yes.
Yes, they are slaves.
Hey, listen, you guys. I just lost somebody. Somebody dropped the call. 414-687-7948 has dropped the call.
That's Malcolm.
Yes. He dropped his call. I just wanted to let you guys know that. Now, go ahead.
Right.
I'm sorry.
That's something that I want to bring to our attention, that a lot of these, the last statements that was brought up about the system, how it's setting up young black people to fail or young brown and black to fail and all that. But I want to come from my personal experience that I'm one of those people that was in prison, that I worked as a dental clerk in the prison, and like every time I would get my paycheck, which was, I was getting paid 19 cents an hour at one point, I got a raise up to 25 cents an hour, and I would buy books like, you know, some literature on black history, literature on Islam, things like that. I worked my way up out of that situation. I didn't take, you know, like put the blame on the man or the system and all that. I took responsibility for myself, that I put myself there because I lied in court about a car I stole. So I'm showing you the other side of that. Yes, the system is set up to send our people into the prison to make money for corporate America, but we have these particular people like me who grew up thinking, you know, once I got arrested as a juvenile for stealing a car, I went down to the police station, they would book me and then call my mother, come pick me up. So that was a setup, like, hey, we're going to slap you on the wrist real light as a teenager. But once I became an adult and I stole a car, it was like, now you're facing prison time. Now you're facing, you know, a judge, jury. You know, it's the real deal now. So I had to learn from my own mistakes.
I don't mean to interject, and I know you're saying from your personal experience, young brother, and you are right, you know, there are people that make those decisions, and those decisions will end you up in jail,
But this is one thing I wanted to say,
you know, in our black communities, we do not have no longer where the whole community raised our children. When I grew up, there were so many programs like during the summer for young children at the playground, keeping them involved in arts and crafts and swimming and you know, everything like that. There are no programs like that anymore to guide our children.
Well, there's one program that the Nation of Islam has for young black and brown. It's called the Fruit of Islam. They teach you self-defense, they teach you community development, do for self, and this is the whole idea behind me even speaking, is that we have to take responsibility for our own action, and instead of focusing on what's being done to us, what did we do? You know, what did we do to put ourselves in this predicament, and how can we get up out of it?
I agree with that 100%.
That's what we're fighting for, the ones that are wrongly convicted.
We're fighting for wrongful conviction. We agree with you 100%.
100%.
I do believe that there are some people that belong in jail. I'm not speaking for those. I'm speaking for people who have been falsely accused, wrongfully convicted. sitting in jail innocent. And the reason why they don't get away with it is because they're poor, they can't afford an attorney, and it's just the judicial system is just made to turn against them. This is something that we must fight. We cannot, I mean, it goes a little bit stronger than just saying, it's a little bit stronger than just saying we're going to claim, you know, we should claim our own responsibility. Wrongful conviction is our responsibility, particularly in our community, because it's African Americans, it's Hispanics that are the result of being locked up for years.
Or killed, you know, with the death
killed,
penalty.
Exactly.
There's so many innocent black and brown people that were wrongly convicted and had to be, and they had lethal injection. They died.
Dr. Randy, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
Okay, can
I'll
you ask,
from
can you,
you
interject in?
I want
to
hear from you.
One, you know, I just want to say this. I have a fundamental problem whenever we talk about African-American people, which is what I assumed we'd be talking about, and the personal trumps, the systematic, it's a problem. If we're people, that's one thing. If we're just individuals, then it's only on what we do as individuals that affects what happens to us. I have a problem when someone says it based on me, it's narcissistic and it's short-sighted, even though it is true specifically to the person who committed a crime. I know as a human rights defender, if we had had things our way, we would have had my friend Dorothy Gaines on this call, my friend who the one thing she did in her life wrong was she wrote maybe a bad check. But because she befriended somebody that was having a drug problem, ended up facing 20 years in jail, serving 6.5 years because somebody lied. I mean, there are thousands and thousands of people who get busted and framed. The ask forfeiture, the RICO, where you can just name groups of people. There have been whole towns in this country where everyone black got rounded up by a racist sheriff. So when someone comes with an individual thing, I'm not going to stop and say, I did it. Sure, you did it, and I'm glad you got it together, and I'm not going to stop. But when there's a system, like in Louisiana, where that whole Angola prison farm was set up, and it used to be a plantation where they were going to work people to death, which is what they've been doing in Angola prison since the end of slavery, and it was systematically set up. What happens to those persons who are criminals and perhaps have a reason to want to say, hey, I'm in here because I did something, fine. But also my friend Kenneth Ford, who never committed a crime in his life or had a parking ticket, that did 6 years in jail.
Somebody turn their TV
down. Thousands of people. And this is who we want to work out with. So, you know, there's a thing about the white Republican approach to looking at the world for black people where all of us did something and that's why we're there.
Right.
In fact, that's the same thing that happened with, what's her name, Jackson, Peel Jackson, the system where the judge tells the people to convict people.
I don't matter. By my case, doesn't matter.
We didn't say anything about statistics. And I'll just be very direct with you. Statistics exist for a reason. So your story is a drop in the bucket. It's not the whole bucket, and it shouldn't be argued as if it is. We didn't say that you didn't commit the crime. I'm glad you reformed yourself. But for people who are framed and are set up by the system,
that is the point. Reforming yourself is the point I want to make to the young black people that I know in the state of Florida that I talk to on interview on YouTube. And they have problems. They selling drugs and they sagging their pants. I didn't go out there pointing the finger at them like, shame on yourself. I let them speak for themselves, and I showed them an example of, look, I come from Southern California. I never seen people dress like this. I want to understand and tell the people why you dress like this and let them have the mic. And by the time I was done, this guy who had grew some dreadlocks for I don't know how long. He saw his video on YouTube getting 90 hits within 2 days or 3 days, and he cut his dreadlocks off 2 days after he saw that video.
If I could change the subject back to wrongful conviction.
Yes.
Would anybody mind?
Well, that's what I'm voting for. If it's about bashing our people, I need to go.
If what?
Hold up. One thing. The reason why I asked Dr. Short to say something, because we need everybody's perspective on it. And we understand that wrongful conviction is a major, major thing. But let us get everybody's opinion. And everybody wait till someone stops talking in order for you to get in. Because just now it was like two of you guys talking, and I think Dr. Short had the floor. So let's be able to give each other that kind of respect, okay, if you don't mind. Okay? All right, go ahead. Who was next?
Who has the floor now?
Dr. Short, were you finished?
All I was saying was this. Absolutely. We have our share of folks who do what's wrong, and they need to clean it up. We've never, as part of Wesley Snipes, ever said we wanted folks to be lawless or undisciplined. However, when it's very clear, not by what we say, but the government itself, for stop and frisk and for driving while black, where its own records say that blacks in particular are disproportionately and unfairly arrested or mistreated just because of how they look. They say so. I'm not pointing the finger at the man, and I'm not excusing the people that sag or do anything else. When the people who are doing the injustice say that they're doing injustice, there is a problem. So we've got a compound problem of criminality and issues that we need to work out, as well as a system that's coming to double up to make certain that if they're not doing that wrong, we're going to get them anyway. That is what we're talking about.
Okay. Yes.
Now, you know, have anybody heard about what happened in New Jersey? And they're actually getting ready to make it a law if they haven't. If they stop you, they can arrest you, even say they stop you for a traffic ticket that was already paid. I think that was the situation. Do anybody remember that?
Yes.
No.
You remember anybody?
Oh.
Well, in New Jersey,
are you talking about
couple.
The Supreme Court decision to strip search?
Yes.
There was a guy who was stopped for a traffic ticket.
Exactly.
And it went to the Supreme Court. But the Supreme Court has made three, not one, decisions which seem to lean in the direction of the government, and it's kind of scary. One is their recent decision on strip searching, meaning that no matter what your crime, whether it's a bad check or you were drunk driving, they could strip search you. And that's a nightmare, because that also includes juveniles.
And you know you can't
sue
now. They won't let you sue
me. And also,
women
want to throw.
They will strip search women?
Yes.
Well,
anybody.
Now, you have to understand that.
I'm curious. Has anyone on this radio show right now been pulled over without cause? Anyone?
Yes.
Oh,
it happened to me in New Jersey. Sure.
Can we hear your example?
My example?
Yes, sir. Your real experience.
Very simply, in fact, it occurred in New Jersey, northern New Jersey. And when we got stopped, they let us go. But believe it or not, we could see for miles that the police had stopped nothing but black or brown people as they crossed over from New York into northern New Jersey. In fact, that was one of the key areas where there was a push and there were suits against the state of New Jersey for racial discrimination. In fact, that helped influence why the government collected statistics on driving while black. That's one instance. And that happened, and we were all let go.
Okay,
now, my father went to court and sued, but none of us had done anything. I got stopped in your Los Angeles. I got stopped by the LAPD, April Fool's Day, 2003. And the policeman, I think the guy was gay, spent most of his time putting his hands all over my rear end. So, no, and that's disgusting. And neither me nor my friend, who's a naval veteran, none of us have a criminal conviction. In fact, the police had to tell their other officer to let us go. There was no problem. They just wanted to humiliate us because we were two black men. And by the way, the officer that was the pervert was a black man himself.
Yeah, wow. But the point I brought that, the reason I asked that question, I just want to show the various aspects of this one element. Even though I've been in prison for stealing a car, never, not once in my life, and I thank Allah for this, I have never been put over without cause.
I would like to add something to this.
Well, I would like to add something.
Go ahead.
I'm a native of New Jersey myself.
Hello?
I'm a native of New Jersey. Hello?
Wait. Yes.
I'm a native of New Jersey myself. And this was quite a few years ago. I used to have a company where I contracted through cleaning development. And my team and I would go to work in this certain area, Bernardsville in New Jersey. Every day that we went to work, we were stopped. First, we were followed by the cops, and then they stopped us. This happened every day until I called the police department, spoke with the captain of the police department, and told him, we work in this town. I'm being harassed every day by the police department without cause, and if this does not stop, I will have civil rights leaders in this town. It stopped immediately.
I would like to add something, if I could. This is Brian Coleman, and I would just like to say that and kind of piggybacking on it, personal experiences, I live in central Louisiana area. It's an area with one river between Alexandria and Pineville, Louisiana. And I was on the way, my eldest son, this was back in the mid-2000s, taking him to school, and the school he goes to, a predominantly black school, and we actually passed a predominantly white school to go there. I live in a predominantly white area out in the country, outside the city limits. We're heading up the highway, and they had a police block going on that morning where they were checking driver's license and insurance. My son informed me right before we got to the block that he forgot his books at home. So I had someone to pick up, and I'm thinking I'm going to save time. I have called his mom and said, meet him with those books. I'm dropping him on the side of the road, and I had to go to the next neighborhood. When I pick this guy up, I'll swing back and get him because he forgot his book. Not thinking in a criminal element. My son got out and said, okay, Dad, I'll be back. So he took off jogging up the side of the road. I pull up, listening to a policeman get on his radio and say, we have one that has bailed. Never think he's talking about my son and bailed out the truck, and they think he's running with drugs. I've never looked back because when you don't do drugs or you don't do crime, you don't think in that element. I proceed through the police block. Now, for me, if we were doing a distraction, it was good because they never checked my truck. Left through, picked up the gentleman, came back through to go pick my son up, and I'm seeing my son stand on the side of the highway, spread eagle with lights flashing.
Mm-hmm.
I then get out of my vehicle to proceed across the highway, and I'm told, stop. If you come across the highway, we're going to arrest you. Well, this is what I told him. Well, damn it, you're going to arrest me today because that's my damn son, and I'll be damned if you're going to put your hands on him, and he hadn't done anything. He's a high school student. When I finally get the cars coming, so when I finally get a chance to get across the street, my wife then pulls up and steps out of the car, and my son said, Daddy, he said, they told me I threw drugs over in the ditch. I said, Daddy, I didn't know,
That's sad.
I didn't tell them nothing, just like you told me. I told them my mama was coming, and I told them where I live. They said, yeah, right. Don't even black people live out there. But the point of it is,
wow.
My son told me that day. He said, Daddy, I used to wonder about the police. I know what you told me, but I ran into the DARE police at school. But now I don't trust them because it's nothing like they do in school. And then my wife walks up, and I ask also, why didn't you threaten to arrest her when she started walking towards you? But me, you're going to threaten to arrest me because they're scared of a black man. But
yeah,
I,
that's what it is. A lot of black men get killed like that, too.
When I asked officers' badge number, he looked at me, and he got in his car and drove off. The second officer, when I asked him, he looked at me and went, and I said, well, I stepped in his door. I said, you're going to arrest me today or you're going to give me a badge number, sir? and he gave me the badge number, and then he also gave me the badge number also, and I did my follow-up report. But a lot of our people don't know what to do. And in the same breath, I was just stopped a few months ago when the guy saw me step out of the truck. Oh, okay, I'm sorry, Mr. Coleman, we got the wrong person, because they know me. But what happens to the people in our communities that they don't know, who don't know what to do, who they don't know can pull a plug or get
but
on the radio?
What about when they do know? Like my friend, since this brother from the Nation of Islam, maybe he's not aware that the head of the Nation of Islam in Mississippi back in the 90s had a son named Andre who was in high school, and the police stopped the head of the Nation of Islam for Mississippi, and his wife was presently in the ACP. They took the boy out of the car, and then they found a way to hang him in prison. They said it was a suicide, claiming that the boy had a can of beer his car. And these cases are all over. So they kill folks in the Nation of Islam that are just as pure as the driven snow, just as fast as it will be someone that is guilty. And by the way, there was nothing that was ever done for that family to do or make right what happened to Andre, their only boy.
And Mr. Brother Shaw, let me say, I am also a member of the Nation of Islam, and they will pull you over. They don't discriminate. They don't care who you are or what you to them, you're just another nigger, and I will say it, that's what they think.
Yes, sir.
And they used to target and kill people in the Nation of Islam right there when they raided the temple in Los Angeles in the 60s, shot the treasurer, and shot someone through the penis, according to Malcolm X's reference to them attacking, going and shooting up a Nation of Islam temple just because they were there. They were cleaning up people, and they mowed them down. Police brutality. There's no justification. It's a human rights violation. And there are plenty of white folk and everybody else that shoot police. I'm not saying it's right. I'm saying it's wrong. The police do not handle with any other people as brutally as they handle blacks. Black people comprise about 90% of the people shot to death by police in this country.
And
there's no way that we're not 90% of the violent criminals in this country, and we're not 50% of the criminals in this country, and we don't use 50% of the drugs in this country.
Okay,
there's something fundamentally wrong.
Somebody asked a question. Can you hear? Hold up, you guys. Somebody asked a question. Why did the Nation of Islam stand up for that?
The Nation of Islam did stand up. They went to court against the LAPD. It wasn't the kind of victory that the Nation of Islam. In fact, the police tried to murder Malcolm X in his home in 1958 in New York, and they also went to court. But that's why we talk about going to the United Nations and to international bodies, because the judiciary, it is often as corrupt as the very people they prosecute, whether they've stolen a car or not. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we need to deal with. For instance, the case that just happened where the mayor of Chicago, former mayor, Daley, has to testify because he and the entire city administration and the judiciary of the city of Chicago allowed one precinct to torture thousands of black men for the better part of 30 years. They had a thing called a nigger box, a car battery that they could crank up and electrocute people with things attached to their penis and their anus to make them say that they did things. And quite a few of those men ended up on death row. There's a gentleman by the name of Standish Willis. He was the attorney who got frustrated because the system would not work. He found out that everybody knew that if the Chicago police picked you up and decided you had committed a rape or a murder, once they got through torturing you, you would say that you did it. So he won because he went to the Organization of American States, and then eventually he went to the UN, and the United Nations High Commission on Human Rights began to inquire, and it began to make the United States, in particular the city of Chicago, look like the racist, fascist pigs that they were, and as many as 200 black men, several of them were released, many of them that were on death row, who supposedly had these ironclad convictions, the same way the dirty police in Pennsylvania and Philadelphia. They were convicted. The police were found guilty of putting, at minimum, 2,000 black folk in jail through false conviction and torture. So we're not saying that we don't have folks who commit crimes, but they add to it. They make it worse. In fact, if you look at any statistics, violent crime is down in this country some 40-some-odd percent, but yet the number of people going to jail is soaring. Property crime is down. All sorts of crime is down, but the number of people going to jail is going up. So people are stealing fewer cars, and yet more people are going to jail for car theft. You tell me that's not crazy.
So what do we do as a people to fix that, to correct that?
Okay, here we go. I'm going to make a long story real short. Okay, my name is Kevin Muhammad. I have a book I published in 2009 named Psychological War, The Battles of a Young Black Man. It's available everywhere. But here we go. Out of everything I did that I take responsibility for, the crimes, the time I committed and all that, going back from 14 years old all the way up to 19 and then spending 6 years in prison, right now today I have a Department of Defense military ID to work on two military bases in Pensacola, Florida. So I want young black people to know that no matter what you did in your childhood, no matter how many doors are slammed in your face, if you keep pushing through, you keep believing and asking Allah to help you, you can achieve things that people cannot conceive. I own 5 businesses right now in my name, you know, 4 sources of income, 1 nonprofit. So I want these people, the young people that may be in juvenile hall right now, they may be in prison right now, just never give up, never stop believing in what you want, write it down on a piece of paper, pray about it, and make it happen, you know, speak it into existence. Thank you.
What can we do? There's 2 things. The U.S. ratifies the Convention on Civil Rights. That convention is really held by the world body, and that can be pointed to that we have torture in America. We have torture in American prisons. But we really made a mistake in 2010 in allowing so many Tea Party Republicans to be elected in state legislators. We have a dysfunctional Congress, dysfunctional Senate, and we need to change some laws. I mean, I want to take just Wesley Snipes as an example. I was convicted on tax evasion, and my case was overturned just recently, April 30th, for wrongful conviction. Whereas Timothy Geithner didn't pay his taxes. Charlie Rangel didn't pay his taxes. Claire McCaskill didn't pay her taxes. So we have a situation where you get it's about what state you're in and who wants to get you. And we live in an America where the laws are subjective. So either everybody who you can't have an oops moment with taxes like Charlie Rangel or Timothy Geithner. If you didn't pay your taxes, you either have to pay them or you have to change the law and say it's not a felony any longer. The only way to work that is there are so many people, Mark Anthony, I can give you a list of 100 celebrities that did not go to jail for tax evasion. I am nobody. I'm just every lip lock. I went to jail for tax evasion, and then, of course, it gets overturned. So you either have to focus on the issue of tax evasion, not necessarily Wesley Snipes, because if it gets to be about him, it won't be as powerful as it is about we have 2 America here. We have the Americas that don't go to prison for it. We have the Americans who do. And I think you need a movement around it. And we don't have a movement around these issues. We don't. We have a lot of people who are concerned, but we don't have a million people on the streets marching. And I think that until you get that, we're not going to see change.
Well, you brought up one good point about the laws being for tax evasion. And I find that kind of funny, being that we have a tax evasion law, when if you look in the Constitution, paying taxes in itself is fraud.
There's really a much stronger argument, and the stronger argument is that being arrested for tax evasion, just taking this one issue, is very subjective. If you take just a list of people that are not in jail and take a list of people that are in jail, you have to ask the question, or it begs the question, why is, let these people pay what they owe. If you want them to do some community service, let them do it. But let's take it off the books that you go to jail for tax evasion. You have
are
to
you,
deal with. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Are you familiar with a person by the name of Sherry Peel Jackson?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
Are you familiar with a lady, a female? Her name is Sherry Peel Jackson.
I don't think so.
Okay, well, Sherry Peel Jackson was an agent for the IRS. She worked there for over 20 years. She retired from the IRS, and she began to do seminars. She received a phone call one day from someone telling her about the tax code law. Sherry researched that tax code law and found out that it was that the IRS tax code in America was a fraud. So she began to have seminars.
Oh, I know who you're talking about
subject.
Now.
Exactly. She began to have seminars
about.
On this subject, and she became like a whistleblower for the IRS.
And then she got into trouble.
They arrested her.
Right, they
arrested her. Her while she was in jail. And she was convicted of the same crime that Wesley Snipes was committed of. These are the only two black people that I've ever heard of in history that tried to fight back from the IRS and ended up in jail.
Wesley Snipes,
his case is a little bit different for me because he was the first African-American male to ever win his conviction. He was not convicted. He was acquitted from his crime, and he still ended up in jail. Now, you have people like Nicolas Cage that owed two times more than Wesley Snipes, and Nicolas Cage never served one day in jail.
But
so
neither did Mark Anthony.
This crime is going to go.
Well, what about
this crime is a lot deeper than tax evasion, and that, I give you, you are absolutely 100% correct.
The
problem with mass incarceration itself is a problem with African Americans and people of color being unfairly treated by this judicial system and ending up in jail. This is a problem that we're not going to ever correct in courts. We're not going to correct this problem by trying to change laws because the people who enslave us are the ones that create the laws. This is a problem that we're going to have to take to the UN, team up with other countries that's going through the same problem, and turn this into a human rights issue.
Yes. I agree with you that that's the UN is one approach, but the UN, if you look at their history, has not had a lot of success on civil rights and human rights issues. Just what we have to do is look at the world.
I agree with that, but there has to be another way where we can come together as different countries.
I would totally disagree with the opinion that the UN has no bearing on race relations.
No, I didn't say that.
It's been very powerful in this country, and that is why it is something that you don't see Jesse Jackson or all these other people dealing with the UN. Because they know better. And I'll give you an example. We've had hundreds and thousands of black people beaten, killed, and mistreated by police since 1990.
Mm.
20 years ago in April, Rodney King's trial, ended in Simi Valley and you had the big riot. And Rodney King was beaten in 1990. In the case of Rodney King, four officers went to jail for beating a man. We've had hundreds of people killed, and most of them never even get into any trouble. What was the difference between Rodney King's beating and these others? Because now lots of police get videotaped beating and shooting people all over the country. The difference is a group called the International Human Rights Association for American Minorities, of which I'm a proud member, started by a gentleman who happened to be Muslim, whose name is Dr. Youssef Naim Clyde, died January 2011. He, along with our organization, were able to go to the United Nations High Commission on Human Rights and bring up the issue of Rodney King. and they came very close to forcing a vote on whether the United States was a country that was engaged in gross racial injustice and unfairness. And that president, Daddy Bush, in order to offset the Chinese and other people who were using this, they put those guys in jail, even though that mostly white jury, if not all white jury in Simi Valley, let them go. There's a game in America. The game is they've done this, whether it's through abortion or through killing us or restricting the number of black people that come in the country, that we would always be bullied. And what is a majoritarian democracy where the majority has democracy, but the minorities are treated like subhumans. This is a game that's played, that blacks will never have enough people or enough money to force fair treatment for themselves. But when you go to the UN, hold on, I'm not finished. When you go outside this country, where 98% of the world's population is not American, white Americans are about, what, 1.5% of the world's population. But in the United States, they outnumber everyone. So they bully. But when you bring the UN, the UN had a thing that passed in the 50s called the International Convention Against Convention for the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination. That happened in the 1950s. That thing started making racism wrong. The United States civil rights laws that were passed in 1957, the year after the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination in 57, the United States passed its first bill dealing with racism because it wanted to keep up. This country has never been on the forefront of rights. It's always been a foot dragger. Then you get the Civil Rights Bill of 1964, and you get the Voting Rights Act of 1965. These things follow what the international community sets as a standard. In fact, the United States in 2009 ratified the International Convention for the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination, yet the United States systematically violates a treaty that it has made with the rest of the world.
It waters it down,
but it systematically does not want. It's supposed to do a range of things, to have independent bodies to look at police brutality, disparity in housing and health, and they won't do this because it would prove on their own stats that this whole thing is a sham and it's a fraud what's being done to us, and it's a farce. So they keep us here fussing, talking about Democrat and Republican. Neither one does anything for us. Or Green, they don't do anything for us either. When Cynthia McKinney ran, look at what Ralph Nader did to offset the sister that was running. To keep us obsessed with this domestic situation, and yet everybody black that's a leader that starts talking about international human rights, whether it's Paul Robeson, who they almost murdered in Russia, to Malcolm X, who they murdered in New York City, to Martin Luther King, who they murdered in Memphis, and other people, Du Bois, who they ran out of the country, and there are people like William Patterson that most of us don't know about, who had charged the United States with genocide in the 1940s. They're not even in our history books, and most of us don't know about it, because this country has recognized for the last 60 years that what the Nazis did to the Jews is very similar to what they do to African Americans, and this country is a pariah nation when it comes to human rights, and African American people constitute the world's single largest national minority group. That means a people or a nation that does not have its own government or control over its own destiny, which means we are hostages. And any society with a national minority group that is persecuted does have high rates of crime, premature death, and everything that we have been told, well, it's just a part of blacks being inferior. And reality is reflective of an unjust and unfair society that does not recognize our human rights.
Okay, I'm going to play devil's advocate real quick. So why are you here? Why are you still here if you've been treated so badly?
Okay, that's a rhetorical question, right?
Yeah. If you're so unhappy about being here, if you feel that you're being treated so badly, why don't you leave?
Because it didn't save money for a passport and a ticket to get up out of here. But all this has been beefed up. the UN is the answer. And I say, no, sir, because when Israel is the one that's bullying somebody, the UN... it's like a little dog behind a fence barking, you know, when it's Israel that's the one that's running around, terrorizing and whatnot. So let's not put all our hope in the UN. You know, we have to put our hope in the little brother next door, like, I got a dude across the street, 13 years old. He having a whole bunch of problems with being bullied and name called at school to the point that he want to kill himself. So here's what I do. I'm offering him a business opportunity. Like, look, you can sell this organic coffee, man. And then they see you got money in your pocket. Next thing you know, they're going to want to be wearing glasses like you. They're going to want to walk around with money in their
money
pocket like you.
Money in your pocket doesn't help my brother. Wesley Snipes is a
well-known
actor.
Why don't you walk with him to school? Why don't you get
right,
up to make sure nobody bothers you?
And his money didn't help him at all.
I am addressing a 13-year-old boy who wants to kill himself right now. This is I'm offering him.
But I'm saying, no, that is not the solution. Why don't you?
No,
you know
he needs some counseling if he want to kill himself at 13 years old. He's in some sort of depression, and our kids are getting more depressed at a younger age these days.
I think you lost my point. My point is I am doing something to reverse the fact that he is angry, he's being bullied. I'm showing him an alternative instead of him going to school punching on people because of what's being done to him. I'm giving him an opportunity to you know, it's a form of distraction.
I understand
but
you took him to take his
and that's commendable.
Somewhere else.
I'm hearing so many different voices I can't hear.
Right.
I apologize. Okay, this is my show, so I'm going to talk real quick. My thing is, what you said was very. We're not taking that away from you, but what I'm saying is, he's saying he wants to kill himself. He needs counseling, number one, and someone already mentioned that. But if you know he's having these problems and you have some time while you're talking, walk him to school and talk to him if he's walking to school. Follow his bus to make sure he's getting in his classes, making sure that no one's bothering him. That's what you should do. So if they see him with somebody that's mature and acting like they got some sense, that can almost deter that bully from bullying. I know you can't sit in his classroom with him, but when he's in those hallways going back and forth, maybe you can make sure he gets to his class if he doesn't have a big brother or a father or anybody else to be there for him. Because the problem with our young kids, they have no one to look up to. They have no one to go to when things are hard. Everybody
well,
can't afford
no we keep making that mistake, saying they don't have. On my particular street, they do have. They have a Kevin Muhammad. I just moved here from Southern California. And
you
I go.
Just
I
just said, Brother Kevin, that if you can do it, don't you do it.
Excuse me. I went to a graduation and filmed for like an hour and a half, just the junior high graduating class. I talked to the principal. The principal invited me back to the school to see what I could do to do like a lecture with the young people. I lectured in the juvenile hall in 2009 in Riverside, California. Oh, they gave me an hour. I took 30 minutes just to laugh and talk with these 44 young boys about what they did to get in there because I was in there at one point and I shared with them my experience.
What I'm saying, please.
Well, here's my point. You're talking about what I should do. I'm telling you what I am doing. I get out in the street and deal with
not just a 13-year-old,
a 16-year-old, 18-year-old. They all have issues and I'm addressing them all in a spiritual, philosophical way at the same time, just being an example to them. I don't have to go and stand next to the 13-year-old in his class to make sure somebody not punching him. But I'm going to give him an example of what I would do as a form of an alternative.
You know,
go ahead.
You know, you keep talking about yourself and the conversation.
This is not self-righteous. I'm just saying I have an example of taking the initiative to get something done instead of talking about what we should do. That's my point.
But I think that there was I'm sorry, I don't know your name, the gentleman who spoke before.
My name is
UN. I mean, we were on a level of a conversation that I thought was very good, and I thought your question, why you stay here, I mean, you don't leave the country because you have things that are bad in the country. You have to make an effort to change it.
Answered the question. I was just being a devil advocate. I totally agree with you.
I
hear you.
But I'm just saying that, we do have a serious problem in the country, and it has to be addressed nationally. I know people are frustrated with the Republicans and the Democrats, as I am, but we still have
all that is hogwash, ma'am. The problem is we keep saying we have problems.
Excuse me, I didn't interrupt you.
But that's the problem, that we keep saying we have a problem instead of doing something about it. I'm a doer.
Excuse me. I didn't interrupt you.
Yes, ma'am, you did not. But we have a bunch of talkers, and then we have doers. What are we doing about these problems? Let me say this.
Everybody who's on this radio show is a doer, sir.
Thank you.
I mean, I spend 7 days a week writing columns for Ex-Offender Nation and working on wrongful convictions and trying to get people out of prison. That is my entire life. But I don't need to announce it the way you're announcing what you do every 5 minutes. I think
but when you put the word problem,
you need to.
That's not what we're talking about.
We're going to be respectful of each other, you guys. We have to be respectful for each other.
All I'm trying to say is that regardless of how we feel about, we have two ways to make change. One through the UN, one through our own political process, and we have to do both. It's not an option just to do one. We have to do both. We cannot allow people, we have an election coming up. It's important that we all participate and know who we're voting for and get people out to make sure that at least we try to get people in who care about our issues.
I agree with you 100% on that. That's exactly why I'm here, because I think it's time for us to bring this issue up to the American people. Wrongful conviction, mass incarceration, this should be a human rights issue. This should be an issue that's spoken in every American household. Instead of same-sex marriage, this should be an issue. And this we have to push towards President Obama or whoever is elected into office. We have to stop dismissing this issue and running away from it and not speaking on it and acting like this is not existing. It's time for us to wake up. It's time for us to hold the ball. If I have nothing against gay and lesbians, but I will tell you this, I give them credit for standing their ground. They took this action, and it hasn't really been long, because I came up from the early 60s, and I can tell you that it was unheard of back then for gay and lesbian same-sex marriages. And today, you know, it's become law. So if they can do that, we can follow right behind their pursuit with wrongful convictions and mass incarceration.
You're making a point that I made exactly in the article, but I would just like
to add something here, please, if I could. I think we have three different perspectives that can kind of combine in one. One was, I think, that the UN has to be addressed. I think the other was speaking of a political process, which I don't think is going to make a difference, because there's no difference between a Republican and a Democrat. Thirdly,
exactly.
I think what the brother was saying is that we have to start doing for self. And I think that those can come into play in combination within themselves, is that we have to work on all three. And I will take that second one, Democrat and Republican, and I think we've been played like a fiddle, because both of them have the same agenda, and that's, to me, to take us out as black people. We just have different means of doing it. And if we truly look at it, as long as the Democrats was in position, what difference did it make if a Republican came in?
Nothing.
Catching hell. We're still doing bad. Nothing's going. Until we do for ourselves, it won't happen. But to go back to the human rights issue, it is an issue. It is wrong. It has been systematically taking us out, and we have to take outside of teaching. They have those that are doing right and are still going down. Another example is I had a close relative of mine who I had to go was charged with a charge of domestic violence with no kind of proof whatsoever, but had to go through 3 years of court fights. Had it not been for him having relatives that could compile some money together and do something for him, he would be doing about close to 10 years right now. But we, as a people, a lot of us don't have those type of resources, and even if we did, like in the Wesley Snipes issue, they still get convicted. So,
exactly.
Yes, it's a human rights
issue.
Yes, we need help, but don't put any stake into this no good political system. That's if a the same political system has set up for us to be slaves, would not wipe out slavery entirely. I don't care if they do work in the prison system. Nobody should work for 20 cents, 19 cents, or 10 cents an hour. Nobody.
Yeah,
well,
nobody.
Let's talk about this after prison.
Okay,
I
let's
mean,
say I agree with you.
After
I agree with you.
Because
you
are in a lifetime of.
Just one person at a time. One person
oh,
at a
okay.
time.
Oh, okay. It's even after prison. Because after they're convicted, it's a lifetime of prison for them. They
exactly.
are not. They're not entitled to a home. They're not entitled to a job. They can't vote. They can't do anything.
Yeah,
so
they're not entitled. But,
what happens is they end up turning right back around and going back into a system.
You know what? That is so true. You know what? That
what's
is so
name?
True. You know what? Hello? Hello?
Yes,
yeah.
I'm here.
The lady who said they're not entitled
you,
to
sir,
a house.
Sir, I'm speaking
ma'am.
Right
yes,
now, okay?
Ma'am.
Let's make a point. You said that was so true. When I was working in the prison system in Tennessee, I had one inmate that I, when he left, I said, now don't come back in here. I was joking with him. And you know
mm-hmm.
what he did? Then I say at least 2 weeks, when I walked in the door, they said, guess who's back? They told me the inmate's name. I said, he just left here. He told me when I went to his door to talk to him, I said, what happened? He said, I can't do it. He said, I'm not wanted anywhere. I can't cope. I can't get back into society. He said, I violated my parole so that I can come back in because here is where I get everything I need. That is
after a while, they
now,
feel
wow.
like their importance is in jail. But this is
yeah,
the whole thing.
To
the brother that
wow.
asked us
that, like
we,
to
what are we doing? Well, I
would
just like for you to know that what we're currently working at this point is to get that question box removed from job applications and housing, the convict question. That needs to be removed. That we can
yeah.
fight through judicial
yeah.
law.
Yeah, but there's
now,
a problem.
The,
there's
this
a
young
problem.
Lady right here, she said that we're not entitled to homes after prison. I got out in 1998. I finished my parole up in 2001, complete. And I bought my first house in 2004. In Southern California. So we can't say you cannot own a house after being
well,
in prison.
Well, I'm talking about the masses. I mean, I congratulate
no,
well, you, and
I'm
I give
one,
you two
I'm
thumbs
things.
Up.
And
when you try,
one,
when you try.
But we're talking about more people that are victims. We are talking about more people that are victims to this society
see,
and treated as slaves after they
don't
are
allow
from jail. Everyone
wait,
is not
going
to have the
don't
same
allow,
opportunity that you were given.
Sir, Mr. Muhammad,
ma'am.
You don't have to let
yes.
just calm down. Let them finish talking.
I'm not,
you
I am
say
calm.
What you have to say.
I want young people to know, don't allow yourself to be a victim like she's saying we are victims. Don't allow
nobody,
that to happen.
You know what?
Right? No.
If you don't claim that, you won't name that. It won't be your name. You know, someone
it's
like
more
one of these
to this system than just name
just,
it and claim it. We were born.
You know, okay. Now, let me say this. My mother used to call me an ignoramus when I was growing up. But I refused to accept that as a title. So I'm not an ignoramus, you know. I graduated from high school. My father did not. My father was an alcoholic. I'm not an alcoholic, you know. There's a lot of things I can give as examples, but I refuse certain things in life,
I think she's talking
not
about something completely different than you're talking about. I just got out of prison. I had to go for a job. I applied for jobs. I applied for housing. What?
Go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I don't need to do that. I don't need to be abused by you.
No, go ahead. I want to hear what you have to say. Go ahead.
So do I. Go ahead. Finish, please.
That's somebody else saying it.
This gentleman is saying not to be a victim. The laws, there's two laws that make it impossible and make people who walk out of prison completely disenfranchised. And if you feel differently, then you haven't. Then I don't understand where you're coming from. When you apply for a job, it says, are you a convicted felon? When you apply for housing, it says,
on federal forms and on state forms, are you a convicted felon? Now, maybe you were able to overcome that, but I couldn't find housing. I had to find, I was homeless and I was penniless. It took 8 months to find a job, and it's not a good paying job. And I'm resourceful and I'm educated, and it was difficult. There is nobody who walks out of the prison who has, you can't vote, you can't get housing. You're not allowed to work for the federal government. The federal government will not hire a convicted felon. Okay, that's the law.
How is it that today, maybe in the first 3 years of being on parole, there's a lot of things you cannot do. But right now, today, I said
no,
earlier,
you can never, you cannot be hired by the federal
government. Why is it now? Why is it that I have and I'm not arguing that you may be right, but today I have a Department of Defense military ID to go on a military base at two of them in Pensacola.
I have trouble, sir. I have trouble believing that. I'll give you my email. It's not true.
That's fine.
But
let's say if you disbelieve me, it's like saying there's no sun in the sky. We know there is one, so let's keep moving instead of talking about what you don't believe. I'm just telling you.
It's not about that.
I have no reason to lie.
Sir, okay, this is the deal. We only have 13 minutes left. Let us be very polite and respectful toward each other. We can agree to disagree. Everybody's situation is not the same. You were very fortunate. We're listening to everything that you had an opportunity to do. We truly commend you on everything. But everybody doesn't have that same opportunity when they come out of prison to have all you have.
I believe we're all born with the same potential.
They have the potential. They
just don't
have the opportunity.
Do you know where Compton, California is?
Hold on.
We have to remember that we have laws from state to state that are changing every day. We live in Louisiana.
And we're going to have people from state to state listening to that.
Cannot take just your particular case and think it applies to everyone. That's just not so.
This is not about Kevin Muhammad.
That's what you keep bringing up, Kevin Muhammad.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart.
What you're going to learn, Dr. Stewart, is that young men have an example. I have a father figure. Biological father. I'll lower my voice. My biological father. Did not mentor me. Okay.
Brother Kevin, this is not Dr. Short. This is Brian Coven, also a member of the Nation of Islam. But what I'm trying to tell you, my brother.
Sir. I know your voice.
The difference is.
And I know that you are.
A lot of difference.
We have 14 minutes left. Come on, let's end this on a positive note.
I'm attempting to tell you something that's going to be very impactful. If you want the young people to listen to this, because they'll turn it off in an instant. If you're not saying something that relates to them, that's why I keep speaking on it.
No, because we deal with young people every day, so that's not true, sir.
Right. Which includes Brother Kevin Muhammad.
You're talking with Mr. Muhammad. You're talking with a panel of people who deal with people every day in all kinds of situations.
Okay, so
you cannot say anything with terms
of law. Okay, so don't exclude.
Okay.
I'm one of the people. All right? I'm not an alien from another planet. I'm rather comfortable.
We
agree with everything you're saying, brother. It's just that this is taking too much time monopolizing this radio thing, and this is not what we came together to speak.
But you know what?
But it sounds like we're not on one accord because we're not talking about.
Let it flow. Let this thing flow. We want to talk and get a little more info out, but we can't do it arguing. Let's flow.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
We want to be on one accord.
I need this information so I can get these people on my other show. So let me have the information. Dr. Randy Short, are you still there?
I don't know if Dr. Short is still listening.
Dr. Short probably left.
Well, and I do want that email address so I can prove to this lady that I do have a Department of Defense ID.
Okay. We can do that. You can do that at another time. But let's go on. Where do we leave off at?
Is that Brother Randy Short?
Hello, I'm here.
No.
My name is
okay,
I'm Roslyn.
Okay.
I'm here.
Wait,
I just want to end the show by saying that If anyone is interested in joining the Free Wesley Snipes movement, you can go to Facebook search, punch in Free Wesley Snipes Movement, and ask to join. Also, you can go to our new website, which is www.freewesleysnipesmovement.webs.com. Thank you for having me on your show today.
Well, thank you very much, and I will be getting back with you, ma'am, definitely, because have we had her on the other show, Brian?
Yeah, they've been on, and I've talked to some of her other members, Kenneth Ford, and they're going to be coming back on to keep you connected.
Okay, good.
The woman from Free Wesley Snipes, you should write to the Jeffrey Deskovic Foundation. That's Deskovic Foundation.
Uh-huh.
He was wrongfully convicted. He's one of the Innocence Project 300 people through DNA was wrongfully convicted. He took his money from his settlement, put it into a foundation, and he works on his director of development. All we do is try to get people out of prison. So
yeah.
Drop a note. Drop Jeffrey a note. And just also write my name in the note that you spoke to Evie.
Evie, I have your address, so I can.
You have my information.
I know how to contact you.
And you can. What you can do is see if the foundation.
I got a young man right here. Hello. I got a young man right here named Chris. He just got out of prison. I want to let him speak on the radio before y'all shut this off. I'll just say something. Just say hi and tell him a little bit. Let him know you're a real person that. You know, getting out of prison, I'm over here being a mentor. What's going on?
How you doing? How you doing, sir?
All right. How y'all doing?
Doing good, sir.
Ma'am? Hello?
Okay.
Hello?
Yeah.
We're here.
Oh.
Yeah, my name is Chris. I was just getting on the radio station just say what's up.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Just
happy to
be
back out here.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. I would like to ask before we get off the air that.
Wait. Let me say something real quick. Listen. I have there's a book by Michelle Alexander. Has anybody heard of that author?
Yes, sure.
New Jim Crow.
Okay, because someone was recommending us to read that book. I had never heard of it.
The New Jim Crow.
You can pick that up on Amazon.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
And also, I had a question for the lady that works with people with the unfair conviction. I was wondering if there's anything that we can do because we filled out, petitions online for Miss Marissa Alexander, who was just sentenced to 20 years for the warning shot. And I was wondering, is it someone that could help her with this situation?
You know,
because
I think
she would have got less time if she would have shot the man.
Well, the thing with the Innocence Program is that they normally help people who can be cleared by DNA. This issue here is not a DNA issue. Again, I say this is a civil rights issue. I mean, a human rights issue.
Yeah, but you're dealing with the governor of the state of Florida, Rick Scott, and that administration has been a nightmare for people convicted. He was offered his 400 people who were just drug users. Were up for immediate release into a halfway house, and he turned it down. We're dealing with Florida is one state, Florida, Texas, Alabama, Mississippi, our state where when things happen, the consequences are tragic.
It's also in
Georgia, where I am. Georgia also has that same stand your ground law.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think
it's
just
states.
Law.
It's 28 states, to be correct.
States that literally have that law.
Yeah,
wow.
My state here. I'm
yes.
in the state of Washington. I'm in Seattle, Washington. Happened to look it up, and I had to absolutely post this to everybody because I was shocked. We have the stand your ground law here.
Yes.
And it doesn't surprise me. And there's more to it to this law that exists, because I believe, this is just my personal belief, I believe that this law protects policemen from police brutality. We have to abolish this law.
Yes, I agree with you, Roslyn.
This law has to be abolished.
Well, look, look at what's going on in Wisconsin. There's a if they are able to recall this governor, it's going to give a lot of people the hope that maybe they can recall other people, or maybe they can repeal some laws. I mean, while we're not while we're paying attention to national politics, these state legislators are passing the Stand Your Ground, the personhood.
Yes.
300 women have been arrested for losing their babies while pregnant, and they, not through abortion, through miscarriage. There's
Louisiana has trying to put in a new law that's going to be considered the strongest in the country as far as being able to own and have guns. So these Republicans, and like I said, they just about the same, just got two little different agendas going down the same highway, are really pushing things that are anti-family, definitely anti-black, and we just have to be aware of these things and not think that this political process has nothing to do with us.
But just learned that Bobby Jindal, primary lobbyist, and the people who put him in jail were the Sheriff's Association. And when I read that, I said, no wonder it's so bad down there.
And Bobby Jindal is one of the biggest snakes that there is here in Louisiana. But just to show you how this state is, they will go and vote in someone of Indian descent versus trying to vote in a black man would have done much better than Cleo Fields. This state is, people just don't know. There's a lot of, here, we just had a young guy that was murdered last year, that it was kept secret, and we're trying to get more information on it down in South Louisiana about the Ku Klux Klan drowned, and it's just starting to now surface in Arrows, Louisiana. So it's so many things that are going on here that a lot of it is hush-hush, and it's hard to get exposed when they can keep it under wraps. We had the Gina Six ordeal going on. We had people in Alexandria being shot dead by the police more than one time, being killed, and everybody's been exonerated. We've had Winfield, Louisiana, where the guy has been tased to death by the police, and they've been exonerated every time they go to court. So we have so many different things going on where police and people of color are being brutalized and killed, and everybody's so-called being justified in everything that they're doing.
I'll tell you, Louisiana is got the highest per capita population of people incarcerated in county jail.
Yeah.
Well, now here's the thing. Louisiana state prisons are actually nice, if you can call a prison nice. But what they do in Louisiana is 50% of the population, where the rest of the country has 5% in county jails, Louisiana has 50% in county jails because the sheriffs get kickbacks. And there is no accountability in these county jails like there is in a state prison. You are safer in a state prison than you are. Nobody knows what happens to all these people. And Louisiana is the most problematic of all the states.
Give you a little Louisiana tidbit history, is that Louisiana, the state of Louisiana, does not name anything after Africa. But they did name one thing after Africa.
Angola.
Angola. What does that tell you? Because it was basically...
No, I know my... This is what I do research on this stuff every day of the week.
You guys, guess what? I'm running out of time. I want to say this. If you guys want to continue this conversation next Saturday, same time, same back channel, we can come back next Saturday and continue this conversation. I'm down to 90 seconds.
Oh, so Lita, please, we want everyone to go look at our group, World Black News and Discussions, and the Great Debate. Those are some great groups on Facebook. Please look them up, please.
I want to thank you. I want to thank you for letting a white lesbian talk tonight.
You are human to me.
Hey, Brian.
Yes.
Brian. Hi, Ed. This is John Robinson. Just wanted to thank you for inviting me on the show.
Oh, no problem. I was trying to blast as much as I could to help my good friend Salida out and get this thing rolling. I think it's going to be good next week.
No problem.
This thing was great tonight.
You guys,
and that email address. I need that email, kevin6xofthefoi@yahoo.com.
Okay. Thank you. You guys come back next week, okay?
Yeah, we will. Definitely will. Thank you, everybody, for attending.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Take it easy.
Thank you all. Bye-bye.
Peace. Bye-bye.